It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here on this pre-boat show edition of the show.
Can't wait for the show. Man, it's going to be good. I always look forward to that every year.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll see y'all down there at the Guide's Corner and hopefully get to visit with our guest this morning. He might be part of the show down there next weekend. I do want to say officially, deer season is over, Mike.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah, so it's over for all crying's over till next year.
It was over when you got started. When it opened, it was over for you.
I didn't hunt a whole bunch. I hunted out west. I went mule deer hunting, but didn't do much back here at home. And this is, when you think about the guests we have on the show, and you think about what we talk to them about, it's going to be the strangest question we start off with. But, hey, Captain Kurt, how was your deer season?
It was pretty good.
Okay. Just because, I mean, the man does, even though we know him for, you know, offshore fishing, the man also has the affliction that Mike and I, you like to chase a whitetail.
Yep, that's right. And I got another piece of property this year. Instead of, I usually like to take the guys out and go Texas or somewhere else hunting. And we got some other land in Selma this year. Instead of doing that, and Lester and Aaron both shot a really nice deer, probably the best ones they shot in Alabama this year. So it was a good year.
Well, that's a good year then.
Did they score anything?
I don't even really know. You'd have to ask them. But they were both nice, nice deer. They wasn't like 140s or nothing like that. But for Alabama deer, they were really nice. My season, I usually kill a few more deer, but it was kind of slow for me. But that's the way it goes sometimes. A couple of our good deer got shot that we were kind of hunting, and we were feeding. Me and my neighbor there was feeding them, and another neighbor that doesn't feed at all killed them.
That does happen.
There you go, y'all. There's if you had to require feeding to kill one, there's proof that you don't have to.
Right. That's right. But you need neighbors that's not going to shoot these marginal deer, you know.
Yep. Yep, for sure. Well, good. And it's
good luck on that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because, I mean, Mike, you shoot all the marginal deer.
Oh, I do. Every one of them.
You can't let them go. Man, it's good to see you get to visit again. Here we are in, you know, it's normal to us, but we talk to people that aren't from the Gulf Coast, and we say, man, we're in prime season here, tuna fishing. They're like, it's January and February. I'm like, yeah, but where we're from, it's pretty darn good then, isn't it?
Yep. I mean, if you want to catch a basically giant tuna, I mean, it's January through end of March, lump season, they call it. You know, that's when you're going to catch that fish. And, man, this year has been exceptional as far as the big fish. They've already broke the Louisiana state record twice. It's just these fish keep getting bigger every year. I didn't fish a whole lot in January. I think we maybe run one or two trips, but the fish were already out there. I said I was just not really worried about it this year too much because it's hard to get a bunch of people down and book trips, and the weather's always, you know, you just never know what the weather's going to do. And it's I usually end up booking a bunch of trips, and we run probably an eighth of them or something. But this year they actually got to go fishing a pretty good bit, and the guys that went, they done really well.
Yeah. So in Louisiana, you said they broke the state record twice. What was the state record? What were the two fish that they caught over there? Do you remember?
The first one was in the 250 range, and the second one was in the 270s. Yes.
270?
Yeah. Although I remember last year, like you and I were talking, and I want to come back to a couple of things, but you and I were talking last year, and you saw a fish, and I'm thinking about the number of tuna that this man has seen, number of big tuna this man has seen. You saw a fish, you said, it was the biggest tuna you'd ever seen.
It was. And we had two tunas. One was like, we had a 225 and a 200-pound, 198 or something on the boat on the deck. And this fish, while we were we were right in the middle of a bait ball, and these fish were literally 30 yards from us, and this fish was giant, man. It was the biggest yellowfin I ever seen. I was thinking the fish that we had were probably around 150 pounds or something, just maybe 175, and then we got in and weighed them because this other fish was just massive. I mean, it was
You think there's bigger ones out there?
Oh yeah, and you know, some people caught some this year, so there you go. And I think some other people that you're looking out there and you see these big fish jumping, and you're like, man, it looks like a Volkswagen or something flying out of the sky.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is when you toss that popper jig out there, you see one of them just eat that thing up. And a lot of these fish, man, get ate by sharks. I mean, we got a real shark problem.
Yeah, seeing some of those videos.
Serious
is like,
shark
I mean, just,
problem.
It's crazy. I've asked you this every year. I'm going to ask you again. We're catching bigger fish. Are the fish getting bigger? You're better at catching them? Back as a kid, if somebody was caught a 170, well, I used to be at the, that was like, but I'm like, that was rodeo winning kind of
stuff. Not even that, Sean.
It was a 173, I remember, came in. That
Lynn Sharpless, good friend of mine, had the state record tuna for like 30 something years. Caught it on Tom Bagwell's boat, the Yellowbird, and had it for 30 or maybe longer years. It was 163 or 4 pounds. Think about that. It lasted for 30 plus years.
Well, I guess I remember maybe when that was – it was a rodeo one year, and they came in. It was like a 173 or something like that. We stood there.
And that's probably going within the last 25 years.
Yeah, it was
last
25 years. And I remember sitting there slack-jawed and something like that. And now you're talking – that's not an uncommon tuna anymore.
Well, we used to fish – we'd fish that Louisiana Wahoo Classic. We don't really fish it anymore, but we fished it for a while. And, you know, they put like a bounty out for 200 – first 200 broke, you know, you get an extra couple $1,000 or whatever. But before the last few years, there are several years, all these boats is fishing this. Nobody caught a 200 pounder.
Out of all those people over there,
yeah. And I mean, you know, here and there you get one or whatever, and you know, but. Yeah, there are definitely fish moved in.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. So it is. There's just bigger fish. It's not that we're just better at catching them.
I guess. I mean, I don't think nothing's changed because they would have got them back in the day. I mean, somebody would have caught one. I mean, you know, everything changes, but somebody would have got one of those fish in, especially these guys pulling these big these sports fishers that set up for marlin and live bait and these big live baits and stuff. I mean, they're set up to reel in 1,000-pound fish if they need to.
Yeah, if they'd have hooked them, they'd have caught them.
If they would have hooked them, they'd have got them. But these fish are definitely they've gotten bigger somehow, some way.
Because you know the next thing I'm going to ask you, Captain Curtis, like, okay, well, what? Are they getting more cheeseburgers or something? What's happening here?
Man,
I've gotten bigger,
know.
Too. But
if you think about it, a long time ago, everything's kind of changing. So, and I was trying to tell some people that go fishing with me. They said, well, I said, not that long ago, 3 or 4 years ago, I said, you might have caught one on a popper here and there, but you didn't have all these boats out there chasing bait balls, throwing poppers, throwing jigs at all these fish on feeding on top of the water like this. I said, everybody went to the horseshoes. Before that, they went to the midnight lump because that's where the tunas were at.
Right.
People just sit there all day chunking. When I went to the lumps years ago, the midnight lumps, it's on the other side of the river, they'd go out there and anchor up. And that's just how you fish. You sit there and chunked all day.
Mm-hmm.
And they caught nice fish, but they weren't the fish that we're catching today, and they're not the same way. And is it funner to catch them throwing a jig to them with a spinning reel? Absolutely. I mean, it's like probably that's what everybody wants to do. Oh, yeah, we just want to go jig and pop or whatever, you know, throw a popper to them. And it is fun. So I think even the other day we were out there and the fish were kind of sporadic. I mean, you'd see some come up. There's good bites right there at daylight, usually at dusk. I mean, that's preferably all the time, your best feed times. So there was a few fish got caught that morning, and every once in a while somebody would catch one in the, you know, right there in the middle of the day. They just doing some trolling because they just weren't staying up. But we continued to mark fish, and there weren't a lot of sharks the other day. But if you would have had 15 or 20, or which there was probably 25 boats there when I got there. Jeez. But if you would have had all these people sitting right there on the horseshoes chunking, there would have been some fish caught. I mean, it's no doubt in my mind, but nobody, the things have changed, and a lot, nobody really wants to do that kind of fishing because it's just like it's outdated or something.
Right.
But not that it wouldn't work, and it is practical, and you still catch them like that. It's just, it's out of style.
Yeah. It's out of fashion.
We'll talk about that when we come back.
Yeah, too. Coming right back. More with Captain Kirk Tillman right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our buddy Captain Kirk from Captain Kirk Charters. And the shark discussion I want to get into, too, because we're having that during the break. And, yeah. I mean, it's...
Like Kirk says, now everybody wants to throw a lure at them on a spinning reel. You know,
What? I can't argue with that because I watch it. It looks pretty dang fun to me.
No, I mean, that is. That's got to be the best way to catch them. That's got to be most fun to catch them that way.
Right.
But, you know, we're talking about they don't chunk like they used to. But, you know, I can imagine why they're not chunking like they used to. Because if you go and do like they used to and you got a bunch of bait that you're throwing out and you're cutting up, pogies or whatever it is you're throwing over chumming, you're going to immediately have a bunch of sharks all around your boat.
Yeah,
you might have tunas too, but it's going to be hard to get to the tuna because of the sharks.
Yep,
that's probably right.
Yep, that's absolutely right.
Yeah,
Mike brought up a good point there. When you chunking out there, especially now with this overpopulation of sharks, it's just not only trying to catch that fish and get him in and keep him from getting ate, it's just all the sharks out there that you're going to be steadily catching before you ever get a bite on a tuna.
Well, the other issue is too, now you're catching them on spinning reel, and I assume you can't put as much pressure on them as you could a conventional reel, so it's taking you longer to get the fish in, so that's more of a chance for a shark to eat it.
That's absolutely right, and that's why a lot of the people out there is trolling now, and they're using, you know, they got a 50 wide or whatever, and they put 40, 50 pounds of drag on him, and they're getting him up, like, super fast. I mean, they're just putting it on these fish, using big gear. They're getting them in with the quickness, and that's the only way you can get them away from them sharks is to get them in that fast. And you can't – you're not going to be able to do that with the spinning reel. You just you know, it's stand-up gear. I mean, it's just – it'd be incredibly hard to get a fish in. You couldn't do it as fast as you could do it with the regular conventional reel. All right. And a rod holder, just cranking on him. And, yeah, a lot of guys been real successful with that, just trolling some ballyhoo and catching them.
Yeah. So if you catch one on a spinning reel, basically, just let's say a 150 to a 200-pound tuna, how long does it typically take you to get one in? Somebody that knows how to fish some.
Man, if you got somebody that knows how to fish, it really put the heat on them. I mean, you know, I tell people all the time, it's you can reel 10 different fish in, and you'll have two or three of them that are going to fight you more than any other fish. But I'd say it'd take 30, 45 minutes if somebody knew what they were doing to get one of these bigger fish in, you know.
Even somebody knowing what they're doing, that's a long dang fight.
I don't think most
people have ever fought a fish that long.
No. And something that big.
Yeah.
That's putting a lot of pressure on them. Now, let me tell you, if you fight something like that for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, you don't want no more after that.
No.
Do you have many people want to catch a second one? after they fought one that long?
Well, funny story is last year I got these guys to go hunting with every year in Illinois, and Lester, my deck hands out there, and we caught two really big fish, and we just rotated. They just rotated it around. Everybody had time pulling on this fish because I was like, "Hey man, if you get tired, just pass it off. Pass it off to the next guy." And man, they'd done it. Everybody got a couple turns on each fish or whatever, and they went and told Lester, "We're done. We need to go. You know, we want to go in." And man, there's fish everywhere. And Lester said, "You see that guy right there? He's going to be chasing these fish all day long. You got to go tell him yourself.
Tell him you don't feel good, you sick."
And they said, literally, we were done. Our arms, we can't even reel another fish in. We are done.
And they got to tell you, I got a place up in Illinois. You come every year. You ain't coming if you don't take us in.
I can't catch another one. Well, I mean, listen, I can't imagine. That's my rule on amberjack. First good amberjack I catch, everybody goes, "Hey, what's next?" Y'all catch them because I'm done. And that's just a dang amberjack. You mentioned here, too, and for people who are new to this, kind of lump season, even though you're fishing not on the lumps, but what's happening? What's going on in the Gulf that makes this a time of year that those fish are on the feed so hard?
Well, all these pogies and stuff's coming out. So
off the coast and going offshore, right?
Yeah. And mullet, too. I've seen a lot of mullet out there. They're eating those mullet and bogies. And
they're breeding out there, right? Mm-hmm. Is that right?
I guess.
I think that's what they're doing.
I know they're gorging themselves on all this bait. Yeah. So all that bait's right there. And for years, these fish go to these it's just like a hump. And there's another natural bottom spot. I call it the natural bottom. You got the horseshoes and a natural bottom is probably your two most productive spots out there at this time. And there's you run into these fish. I caught them at 45 miles from Dolphin Island last year, feeding on piles of bait. So earlier on, you just run across a big school of pogies or a pogie ball or something, and you'll just see all these fish feeding on top of the water, feeding on them, and sometimes they're not on. Now they're kind of everybody's kind of congregated on these spots because that's just where the fish are.
So there is a spot, kind of. It's not just going and saying, "I hope we could run across them."
Yeah, but probably until most of the time they hit these spots. But with this bait pushing out, these fish will swim up in 100 foot of water and be feeding up in there.
It's crazy.
25-30 miles from
100 feet of water.
Yeah, 100 feet of water catching these giants. Yeah, and you know they'll be all the way. If you're talking numbers here, like they'll be all the way on like a 10 or something, which is probably straight south of the middle of the island, like 88-10 sometimes. Some guys run across the whole school of them over there, but there's a bunch of bait over there, so those fish were over there. And, last year they was me and another guy made up this place called the Middle – we called it the Middle Ground because for probably 3 weeks all these fish were just popping up in these random spots that were – way to the east of the horseshoes and every, you know.
In between the two places. Yeah,
just not even in between the two places, but just like on east side of the salt dome, which is sometimes you catch some at the salt domes, but they were just popping up wherever and you had all these boats and they were just, everybody was just running looking, you know, because they really wasn't piled up on the natural bottom or the horseshoe, so everybody's just riding around looking for these pogie balls. If you find a right one that's just not covered up with sharks, that's got some fish in it, sometimes it's just all tuna, man. If you there at that right time, you're going to get them, man, and it's game on. And
but you were saying that's kind of happening first light, last light kind of thing? Or
man, that happens kind of just whenever that bait's up on top of the water. And it's generally a little – you know, this January, first part of February, the other day when we went out, they they were pretty much on the horseshoes, and all the other guys were there too. So,
what a lot of people don't understand about tuna fishing, it can be a hit or miss too.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's been times I'm sure you've gone out there and the bait's not there, the tuna's not there, and you come home empty-handed.
Yep. What this is like you're going trophy hunting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best way to explain it. I mean, you're not going for like a regular tuna or anything. You're going for like the biggest tuna that there are in the Gulf. And so I went a couple times this year already, and we never even seen a tuna. And I don't know if anybody else did either. I mean, we didn't see any. It was just a slow day. But what there are out there this year are piles of cobia everywhere. We just had jigs. We didn't have no live bait or even any dead bait a couple of times. We're just working these jigs, and there's piles of cobia out there this year.
If y'all could only see on radio how far I arched my eyebrow when Captain Kurt just said piles of cobia. Okay, do tell.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
– But a lot of people don't realize that winter fishing cobia has always been a thing out in that deeper water. Fishing some of the deep rigs out there, that's always been a thing.
Yeah, but I think they're migrating out, and they're just farther offshore when they're coming back the other way.
Yeah, they just get hung out there wintertime. Ling fishing is really good.
Yeah, well, kids, I mean, kind of growing up, you thought, all right, when we start, you know, start coming down the beach, it's April, that's the start of it. But you got to ask this question, well, where the heck were they before? They had to be somewhere.
Yeah. Well, some of them do, you know, go to the south, like Florida and all, but I'm telling you, every year that I can ever remember, there's always been ling called out at some of the deep rigs.
All right, coming right back, more with our guest, Captain Kurt, right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our buddy Captain Kirk, Captain Kirk Charters. By the way, too, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, but I got a bunch of questions after our interview with Don Dubuque. What would happen? And so if y'all missed it this morning, from 5 to 7, classic episodes, that means we're old. Antique episodes of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors from 5 to 7. And then we come on at 7 each Saturday morning. So
that'd be interesting. I might have to listen to some of those. That'd be a treat.
Listen, I was listening to stuff to try to get stuff put together. I was like, I listened to it like it wasn't us. I was like, oh, it's been so long. I'd forgotten it.
Yeah. But I got a question for Kirk. You know, Kirk, years ago, and I'm sure you fished over at the Midnight Lumps years ago, and the Midnight Lumps is off Southwest Pass, Louisiana, and it's, 17, 25 miles, somewhere around there. I can't remember exactly now. But that was where everybody went to catch tuna. Nobody ever said, we're going out to the horseshoe rigs to catch tuna. Everybody went to the Midnight Lumps. And it was good fishing. People caught a lot of tuna over there. And it just dried up to where there was no tuna over there for years. Now, I don't know what it is now. Do you know?
I haven't. A couple years ago, I heard of a couple fish being caught out there again. But I think it's I never hear of anybody going over there anymore. And that's why I was saying things are kind of like changing a little bit. I don't know why everything's kind of moving this way. And even like I was telling y'all, with all this bait and all this stuff being, and us catching those fish so close to Dolphin Island and all those fish being way over to the east. I mean, and, you know, I forgot to even mention this. In October, somebody caught, there were several big yellowfin showed up on Southeast Banks, and somebody caught one.
So, really? So and way east.
And that's 15 miles from, you know, Dolphin Island.
Yeah.
Don't they know they're not supposed to be in there? Did nobody tell them this?
And some guys caught one at 251 a few years back. And, I mean, you know, those big fish actually get up, you know, crazy thing is you might not know where they show up next.
Right.
Yeah, well, I mean, we won.
Yeah, in the pier, remember? Somebody caught
yes,
one on a pier.
They
yeah.
sure did.
Yeah.
I think we won first. I was fishing Mark Kennedy. I think it was first or second place tuna while we were King Mackerel fishing in a 100-something foot of water off Louisiana. They just came up and swam around the boat, and we threw jigs out and bait at them, whatever we threw. I can't remember now.
Yeah.
And caught both of them. And won first and second place, I believe. So you don't ever know. And you said a while ago, you know, now they're close to Dolphin Island. We're talking about the midnight lumps on the other side of West Southwest Pass over there on the other side of South Pass. But when you say close, that's relative. I mean, you're still talking about 70, 75 miles to go to from Dolphin Island out to the horseshoe rigs.
Yes.
Salt domes or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, that's not really close, but it is close compared to going on the other side of the river over there.
Yeah, but I'm for several days last year, those fish were 45 miles south of West Point.
Yeah.
Like going off, like I'm talking about acres of them. John with Big John Outdoors and Ryan Morey was on the boat with me, and we literally, every time I was like, all right, guys, we got to go. Man, these fish wouldn't hardly eat anything. When I say there was thousands of them, there was thousands
of tuna.
Tuna, sharks, all this stuff, but tuna's everywhere. And we would leave, and I was like, all right, guys, we got to go in. And we'd start running, and, man, a whole another bunch of them would pop up. We would throw at them. We had only caught three that day. But these other fish, we just could not. They just wouldn't eat what we were throwing. And we had the best of the best stuff that anybody can get and knows how to throw. It's experienced guys on the boat, and we couldn't get a bite. Sometimes these fish just don't bite.
Yeah. But they're feeding.
They're feeding.
There's something they're biting on.
Yeah, they're eating these pogies.
Yeah.
That's
funny, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's, so much of, and probably it's because it dominates the video because it's so exciting to watch. So much, it's popper driven. You know, and I always look to throwing a popper. I'm like, does that look like a flying fish or something? I don't know what it's supposed to look like. Find something along the surface. They love them, but I don't know what they. Or is it mullet? They think it. I don't know. I mean, they sure like them.
Well, sometimes these fish are just balled up in a ball, and other times,
you mean the bait?
The bait, yeah. And then sometimes the bait's just out swimming, and they're like a couple feet apart or whatever. But all these fish, all the sharks and redfish or tuna or whatever, is just, you know, eating these random stray fish here and there, and there's so much stuff going on. I think these fish get, they don't know which way to go, so they're easy prey or something.
Well, that's what I need. I need the dumb ones.
Yeah, we need some really dumb ones to put on a hook and toss out there.
So when the tuna wouldn't hit, were y'all catching sharks?
You will if you leave that popper, that jig in the water too long. I mean, because they're chasing it.
Right.
A lot of times when we were doing it, you would see these tunas, you'd see these all these sharks, but on the outside of them or right in the front, like right before the sharks was just everywhere on top of the water, these tunas would be coming in little droves just taking shots at the bait, like in front of all these sharks and like in the front.
Sharks were following the tuna.
Yeah, and they're literally hand in hand, but there's 15, 20 foot where these tunas are busting up right before all these sharks or whatever.
Okay. So,
and sometimes the crazy thing is when you get one of these big tunas ate, you're thinking, oh, well, it must be some giant shark ate this tuna. Mm-hmm. But it's not, because I've reeled them in and I've had them eating the tuna at the side of the boat. It's all these thousands of regular sharks are just taking their turns.
It's not all these big giant.
And I was kind of in that concept of thinking, man, there's got to be this giant shark out here with all these regular sharks, but it's not. It's all these sharks. It's just like a pack of wolves or whatever.
And everybody takes a bite.
And they're just eating, eating this thing up. Yeah, in a frenzy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You mentioned that, talking about like where those tuna were in front of the sharks. So to uneducate, and I'll be the uneducated here, we come in, we're lucky enough to come up on a bait ball like that.
Yeah.
How do you approach it? I mean, you see the bait ball, we're there. Okay, now what do we do?
You just got, and another thing too is different people do things in different scenarios. A lot of times you'll have a bunch of boats and everybody sees this bait at the same time. I mean, there'll be 15 or 20 boats running toward the same pot of tunas over there. And so The thing about it is usually the first guy that gets to cast in these fish, that's the ones that get the bite, man.
Okay.
I mean, and you just about got to knock these fish in the head with it sometimes to get them to eat this bait.
Really?
I mean, yeah, you got to like, if
are you
they're
looking
going,
at, you
like,
let's
just say
tuna.
All the fish are going to the right.
Uh-huh.
Well, you need to cast out in front of where they're going because they're like, or if you,
they're not going to look behind them or the side.
Yeah, or sometimes you can see the bait out in front of them, and they're just hit. Sometimes they'll just be working a little pile of bait, and you just toss it out in the bait. But you, if whichever direction these fish are going, you need to just put the bait where they can actually see it if they are going.
And we just got a second here. The music's going to start, but we come back. But you mentioned like the first person gets a shot. Is that because when all the boats show up, do those fish go down?
They usually do, yes, sir.
So it's just like...
just like speckled
trout fishing. But that's what I'm doing. Like,
yeah.
I'm taking the world I know and the world I don't know and like just approaching a bird school of speckled trout. All right, coming right back, more with Captain Kurt Tillman, Captain Kurt Chargers, and we'll be returning in just minutes. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Always a treat when we get Captain Kurt in the studio. And I'll just do this. The conversation we're having during the news break there is about what you're throwing at them, the lures, the colors, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, what is the what's the go-to right now?
Tip of the day.
Yep. If you're doing a no-lie bait needed or the plastic jigs or whatever, white. I mean, whatever reason they're eating that white one. Look, you can look at all the other videos,
but that's you're saying that's for whether you're doing soft plastic, hard plastic, it's white.
That's what they're eating.
That's kind of strange, isn't it? So soft plastic, you're using a soft plastic with a jig head on it a lot, and then you also use hard plastic. Do you have a specific hard plastic or a specific soft plastic that you're using?
We're using the no lie bait a lot with that paddle tail or the it's like got a split tail.
This is a softie. Mm-hmm. Okay, and how long is it?
We're using like a 3 or 4 ounce jig head, and then it's probably six or eight inches or something.
I mean kind of just being up in the tuna guy here sounds like a ling jigs we used to use, like a
kind of
basically the same thing.
Okay. Those are nice because you can throw them about a half a mile if you do it right.
So now,
when somebody backlashes, pow!
Yeah, put a hole in somebody.
Yeah,
those babies will throw a good distance. But and when you do them, you throw them like that, and then are you just ripping, reeling it, or are you letting it go down, or what do you do with that?
It depends on the fish. Like if the fish is up on the water and you see him feeding on top, you're actually going to throw that jig out there and work it through him.
Okay.
The other day, we're marking fish at 150 foot or so we're just dropping it all the way down or lower, and we're just working that jig back up. And if you look at these jigs, even come through the water, if you whatever one you use them, they've got a bunch of jigs out there. And man, some of them. They got a nice action to them. Like you can look at the action to them, and
so when you're jigging it, it's doing something other than just coming straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah, they got some action to them, and I think that's just setting those fish off to eat them or whatever. And sometimes like last year, it seemed like a light green one would working better, but this year it's been white for us.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a. If you was going to go throw one out there, I'd put every one of them white. We got every color in the book, but the white one's the one that's been getting eight.
Right, that's the one we use, the one that they bite, for sure.
So what about hard plastic? What are you using on that?
They've got a bunch of different ones. I think when you throw in the hard plastic, it's mainly like a popper or something, and then I think that fish is basically, when you – pop it and it just sees the splash. I like to use a blue one with a red mouth. We done real good last year with a gold one, like a Halco. But they got some twitch baits that people's been doing good with.
They kind of skip on top of the water.
No, they just dart.
Like yeah, dart.
Really like, they can be like a bass fishing twitch bait? Like
But it's just a bigger rig set up.
Huh, you know, I like those.
Yeah, so they're just twitching through the water, you know, and they actually got some now. It's the same bait, but they got a weighted one that sinks down. And, you know, I haven't personally got any bites on it, but I think some other guys have been doing pretty good with it because it's just like a jig. Instead of dropping a jig, you're dropping like a twitch bait that's a weighted twitch bait that sinks, and then you
it's probably twitching its way down too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times with these things, you get hit just dropping it down.
That's what I was going to ask you. Do they ever hit it on the drop?
Absolutely.
So are most of those hard plastic baits that have treble hooks, or are they
a lot of
circle hooks?
Treble hooks. And a lot of times we'll switch those hooks out because you're catching enormous fish most of the time, and some of that stuff's just not up to par.
You got to put bigger hooks.
Yeah,
we'll like
put a BPK hook on it or whatever, and it's like the hook could pick up a truck.
Yeah, that, and you got to put a bigger split ring a lot of times too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so you can't just change the hook out. You got to change the split ring out too, and then hope that the internal part's strong enough to hold all that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we even had the Nomads before just pull the whole tail end of them out.
Yeah. Know, oh, yeah.
Catching big fish. Up.
Jeez. Well, man, the size of fish you're talking about, I guess. Mm-hmm.
So another quick thing, what about pound tests? When you use the spinner reels and you're casting, what pound test are you using? You're using spider wire or?
Right. Yeah, we're using a braid. Yeah.
Braid, yeah.
And we use, I like to at least have 80 on it. I know a lot of guys over there has went to a bigger braid just because these fish have been bigger this year, and they're putting a lot of heat on them, and they even using some, putting some stuff, things in a rod holder to actually, even on a spinning reel, just kind of where you ain't got to hold it and lean down on it.
Right, right. Yeah.
Just so some of them's using up to 175-pound test, but I'll usually use 80.
Yeah. I can think it's, you want to be able to, I mean, it's just, let's not break it off, but let's be able to cast it a good distance, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the lighter the line, you know how it goes. The farther you can cast, the easier it is to.
And the action of the bait typically is better with a lighter line.
Yeah.
Too.
I mean, it's that way all the way around. You gotta trade one for the other. The thing about it is, if you hook one of these fish, the last thing you want to be worried about is that line breaking. You need to put as, with the shark situation, you need to put as much heat on that fish as you can. And some of these fish, a lot of times, they'll hit that bait when it's 10 foot from the boat sometimes. It's just crazy because these fish are just feeding in there.
They're not really paying attention to your boat?
Paying attention.
Even your
stuff.
Big boat?
Yeah. Sometimes they're just not paying attention. So.
Leader-wise, what are you running to?
We usually use a short leader.
Short being how long? What would you say?
3 foot.
3 foot, okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, if we're on a poppers, I just don't like to put a big old long, just enough leader where if they swallow, it's still going to be on the leader.
Mm-hmm.
We use like 200-pound test, 130 sometimes, or fluorocarbon. But I use a heavy leader just because they'll chafe it out if you get one that swallows it.
Well, it seems to not be a problem. See, the fish you don't catch, it doesn't seem to be a problem.
Yeah.
All that. All right, I want to do this too, and of course I don't have time, but I was going to ask him about deep dropping. So you're coming back, we got to talk. You have a pretty decent year on that. Have you done any?
We hadn't done any this year. Trey, one of my captains, ran a trip right before Christmas. He done really well. He caught some, caught a snowy. It's probably pushing 50 pounds. it was pretty good. There's so many people tangled up and wanting to go tuna fishing right now.
I get it. Yeah, that's why I'm going to wait till later to ask him bug you about
but
it. But you know I love it.
Fishing ought to be really good right now. It is every year when you go out, right? This time of year, the deep drops usually as good as it's going to get.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we come back and talk about that. Somebody wants to get a trip booked with you right now for tuna or deep dropping or snapper, all that. How do they do that?
Captain Kurt Charters, just look me up on Facebook, Instagram.
Yeah, you kind of everywhere.
Fishing Chaos, like my booking app, and go on there and book it. Yeah, or just call me, 251-288-1003. Yep. and I'll try to answer. And if I don't, I'm probably out there fishing.
Yeah, he will get back to you when he gets back on shore.
Yep.
Captain Kurt, as always, I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yep, thank y'all.
Thanks, Kurt.
All right, and we'll do it again next week. Another edition of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And we'll be live at the Mobile Boat Show. So come see us.